Keith, you told me an interesting story about a band job that you obtained at the Mermaid, which started at 7 a.m. on Friday mornings. What's the story on that?
Well, we were still playing at Papa Joe's, and then we had the chance to do this Mermaid in Moundsview. They wanted to catch all the people that were had been working the night shift at Honeywell, almost across the street from the Mermaid. So we came out there with dancers. They wanted a dancer, and we brought a go-go dancer with us. And 7 a.m. on Fridays, it was payday for people. And I couldn't believe it. You know, I was just getting up from Thursday night, and maybe still up, probably, and heading out there, and here are these people over there drinking and partying at 7 in the morning. I couldn't believe it. I think we did it just for a week or two, and then we just kind of said, well, there's, I don't know, the audience for this kind of live rock music at 7 in the morning, but they liked it, but it was pretty tough to work the night before and get up and go out and do that. And be.
So you'd work the Thursday night before, the Friday at 7 a.m., and then Friday that night.
Yeah,
right.
That seems like doesn't leave much time for sleep.
No.
And that's why we probably didn't do it more than once or twice.
No, just a couple of weeks we
did
it.
But it was fun because there were lots of people and they appreciated us.
Jack, what happens next with the Starliners?
Well, in July, I decided to leave.
That's July 67?
Right. I went back with Denny Dale briefly in Hopkins. And then I joined a group called Bobby and the Shy Guys, and they had horns, two horns, I think, and bass and guitar and organ. And I had this idea. For some time, I had been using false vampire teeth to, Keith would do a song, Hey There, Little Red Riding Hood, Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs, and so I would put these teeth in, and I would glare at the audience, and I'd fluff my hair up. My hair was kind of puffy at that time. And then when we had a go-go girl, I would chase the go-go girl across the stage.
Well, still, stage act.
Still playing. Still playing bass. And it was fun. It was. So I had this idea. I thought, well, we're still looking for that hit record. What if Bobby and the Shy Guys changed their name to Dr. Jackal and the Formaldehydes? And I thought, well, let's see, if we did that, then we could have a record like With Her Head Tucked Underneath Her Arm by the Kingston Trio, one of my favorite songs, my favorite group. And so I went in the studio, talked to Ron, and I recorded With Her Head Tucked Underneath Her Arm. Lance Dunkirk playing drums, and Ernie Jurgens playing organ, and me playing bass. And I asked Keith if he would come and play guitar for this. So he agreed. So we did this song, and Lance and I took turns singing the verse, both together on the chorus. Well, nothing ever happened at that time. Bobby and the Shy Guys didn't last very long. So I went back with Keith and John, who were still at Papa Joe's. In my absence, they had added John Fritz, who played keyboards and also trumpet. And he could play one hand on the keyboard and the trumpet with one hand. So that was also a plus, two instruments at the same time.
Did John sing as well?
Yeah, he sang too. He had a pretty good voice.
So now you're a four-piece, still at Papa Joe's, and all four band members sing, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And Keith, what happens next with the band?
Well, we went down to, I think we went to the Poodle from Papa Joe's. We ended up at the Poodle downtown on Hennepin Avenue.
Yeah, with a long-term contract.
What was the time frame on your job with the Poodle?
Oh, I think that was, January 68?
Right.
We there, started the Poodle.
And that's at 810 Hennepin Avenue.
Yep. And we played every night of the week, with the exception of Sunday. And, of course, we had that double on Friday.
But we also played Sundays at the Officers Club out off Post Road in Fort
Snelling. By the airport?
Too. Yeah, by the airport. We did that on Sundays for quite a while.
And also the Belmont, too?
I don't think we played the Belmont while we were playing at the Poodle.
No.
Okay.
We had played the Belmont when we were at Papa Joe's in between.
So how was the Poodle different than Papa Joe's as far as the crowd or atmosphere?
It's a dinner crowd. I mean, they had a dinner crowd. They served food, good food. And, you know, the audience, instead of having bike jackets on at Papa Joe's, they were suits and ties at the Poodle.
Still a lot of gangsters, though, down at the Poodle on Hennepin Avenue. But it was a fun place to play.
And how did the Starliners go over at the Poodle Club?
Well, I think we went over quite well.
They liked us. Yeah.
They liked us, and the owners, they treated us good. And except that time they had the fire, Jack had to rattle their cage to get some reimbursement, because when they had a fire in there, they said, we lost some equipment. And they said, we got it covered. And it was trying to get our share back was pretty tough. And they just kept, I'm tired of this guy asking me about it. And he told me.
Well, we kept our cases in the basement. I think that's where the fire was. And so I had no case to put my bass in anymore. And if I wanted to take it home, I had to wrap it up in a blanket or something. So they finally got us what we needed.
And I understand there's another 45 here, as well as a change in the name of the band. How does that come about?
Well, in September of 68, we said, boy, we sure wish we had this, you know, a record. Again, it's looking for that one record. Well, I had With Her Head Tucked Underneath Her Arm in the can, and we also had recorded Broken Engagement in a different way, different arrangement. Denny Dale played 12-string guitar on that one, and John and I and Keith. I redid the vocal on With Her Head Tucked Underneath Her Arm so that my voice was in prominence for the whole thing instead of having the drummer's voice on any part of it. Just remixed it. And then Keith and I shared the expense for the 500 copies for the 45. We thought we were going to have airplay for Halloween. Then that's after we had it pressed, we found out that radio stations don't play Halloween things. They play Christmas and summer. So if you're the Beach Boys, you're in good shape. Or if you're Bing Crosby, you're in good shape for Christmas. But we weren't for Halloween.
So you've got 500 records. What do you do with them?
We basically had to sell them over the bandstand. And at the end, we both took half the records that we had left, home. So if you need a copy.
And this comes out under a different name, correct?
Well, we thought this would be a good time. See, we thought if we had this record that was going to be bizarre, well, we needed a bizarre name. So what about The Transplant? That's pretty bizarre. And then maybe we'll get it like Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. I mean, you know, you're looking for that hit with that combination of the name and the hit, and never happened. And so we changed our name to The Transplant.
So the Starliners officially become The Transplant.
Right. And with that fact, we stopped wearing our suits and ties, the suit coat and the black turtleneck, we like to wear that too, to Nehru shirts and psychedelic colors.
It was a change in the times, right?
Yeah, because this was the time the Strawberry Alarm Clock came out, and Green Tambourine, all these weird things in the psychedelic era. We tried to get into part of that.
Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, Jimi Hendrix.
Did you start playing psychedelic songs, too? Or harder rock?
Yeah, we did. I think
we did
some Hendrix. I did some Steppenwolf. We had a good mix. Again, top 40. The only original song we did was Broken Engagement. But we did With Her Head Tucked Underneath Her Arm when we played too, so we could try and sell that.
How long does your run at the Poodle Club last?
It was long.
Oh, right into, I think, 69. That was about the last year at the Poodles, you know. And then John Rosner decided to leave the band.
Yeah, when John decided to leave in June of 69, I felt a real disconnect, because I had been with him so long. So I decided to leave too.
Was it hard for you to leave the band, Jack?
It was.
So Keith, what happens? Is the band officially over? And
You just kind of limp along, you know. You got some jobs. I was born to play, and yeah, it was hard losing Jack, and it was really hard losing John too, because when you work with such great musicians, you know, and you just try to fill in with here, it's just never the same. You know, you get so used to the sound and the timing of just, I mean, I was really fortunate to play with great people, you know, and it's just super when you have people like that playing with, and it's tough to start over. But I just limped along with this and that, and then I become a group called Group Therapy.
Was that in 1970 then?
Yeah, I think that's about that time.
So you stayed with, you put a new club band together?
Pardon?
You put a new club band together called Group Therapy?
Right, yeah.
Okay.
We played at the Mermaid again, but we were there, you know, like in the nights, not in the mornings anymore. And we played at the Belmont and St. Paul for a long time. And actually one time, then Jack came back and played with us.
After
a
year and a half of being gone, I came back and I was at with Keith at the Belmont for a year and a half before I left again.
In Group Therapy?
Right.
Okay. And after Group Therapy, what'd you do, Keith?
We played at the Hofbräu. We played at that Chinese place out in West St. Paul was our last job, the rickshaw. When disco came in, and a lot of these clubs were going to disco, and that's when I just said, I don't know, this music thing is just not working. And I had the great people in the Group Therapy at the end. I had my cousin on bass, David Maslow, was just one of the finest around ever. Vicky Mountain was our vocalist, and she's still doing well, and you know, teaches at MacPhail, and Don Beauclair was on keyboards, and he used to be with the Hot Half Dozen and other people, and Don was just a monster on trumpet and synth and piano and organ, and Kip Grayson was a drummer, and he was just about as good as John Rosner, and that was really a good group, you know, and we worked around. But the music scene, I don't know, when the disco coming on, I just wasn't enjoying it that much, and I just decided to kind of end the group, and I moved to Hawaii, and I stayed in Hawaii for 13 years, and I worked over there. I had a band called Cactus Jack, and I got kind of into country music over there, and it was kind of nice. It was a nice diversion, because I hadn't played too much country, but this was like country, and when the urban cowboy came in, everyone was a cowboy, and we happened to be in the right place at the wrong time, I mean the right time, and we played at the Hilton Hawaiian Village there, a club called Shasteen's, and we recorded an album in the studio there, Cactus Jack Live, and while I was over there, I got to put a band together, and we backed up a Hall of Famer, Hank Thompson, was over there, and I put a band together. We backed him up at a couple of shows, and once we were playing down at Outrigger Canoe Club, it's a real high buck place in Waikiki, and the manager came up on one of our breaks. He says, Tennessee Ernie Ford is a member. He's over here on vacation. He's wondering if he could sit in and sing a couple songs to you guys. I said, are you kidding me? Tennessee Ernie Ford wants to sit in? And he says, yeah.
He's the one who did 16 Tons.
Yep. 16 Tons, and he had his own show too, you know, I mean, for years on TV, mm-hmm. Country Hall of Famer also. And I says, well, yeah. And so he came over, and he didn't do 16 Tons. I was hoping he would, but he did Cotton Fields and something else. And what a gentleman he was, because, you know, when a band breaks, bands are always going in different directions. The members, I'm going to do this, you're going to do that, and we'll see you in 15 minutes. But Tennessee Ernie was such a gentleman. He rounded up each guy he found. Each guy on the break shook their hand, thanked them for playing, said, oh, you guys did a great job. Thank you for letting me sit in. Mm-hmm. And that was really cool.
Jack, after Group Therapy, what did you do?
Well, I want to say something about Keith's adventure in Hawaii. Do you remember the Bronco Bar?
Yep.
Was that your gig? Because I had a vacation in 84 in December. It's just before Christmas. Mele Kalikimaka. Merry Christmas. I went over there. Keith loaned me his motorcycle, so I toured the island with that. He had talked to John Rosner. John Rosner was over there playing drums somewhere. We went out to supper one night. And the next night, I think it was, both John and I showed up at Keith's club, and we had a 15-year musical reunion.
Nice.
Of the Starliners.
Was that fun, Keith?
Oh, it was great. You know, like, it was really amazing because John Rosner had ended up in Hawaii way before me, and I didn't, you know, he was visited home once when I still had group therapy, and I knew he was in Hawaii, and so when I got there, I looked him up, of course, and John was so good that he was one of the top drummers in Hawaii. He'd work with the whole show, he worked with this and that, and to have him come off on his night off and play with Jack.
And I have it written down in my archives somewhere that we started at 10 o'clock, and we didn't take a break until we were over at 1:30. We just played solid Starliners music, what we used to play.
I had been working there as a duo with a bass player from Texas. We had an auto orchestra type thing for background, and we were working as a duo in this club. But John, he brought his drums in, and Jack used my buddy's bass, and away we went. And that's the last time we've all played together with John, from what I hear, is in Las Vegas now, the last I heard. But after that, I actually was in a band with John called Paul Flynn and Company. It was a 50s show, and I played bass.
In Hawaii?
In Hawaii. And John Rosner was the drummer. And so John and I got to work together, and it was really funny because I hadn't really played bass with anybody, but this friend of mine was the bass player in this Paul Flynn and Company, and it was just drums, bass, keyboard, and lead singer, no guitar. My friend was leaving. He says, Keith, you should come down and audition for this job. You can't find a bass player. I said, can't find a bass player? No. He says, we're doing 50s, and none of the local boys, they don't have the feel for it. And so I went down, and John Rosner was the drummer. And I says, oh, this is great. And I taped him that night. I taped him, and I went home, and I had just got a 59P bass I bought from my friend for $300, and the guy that fixed all my guitars. And so I said, well, I'll listen to the tape, and I worked up some of the songs. And these guys did like nonstop show. They would go from one song to the next song, the next key with no stopping and all this and that. And I says, wow. So I said, I'll learn their first set. And which I did, and I went down to audition, and John kind of smiled. He was the drummer, and he said, I said, they're just a keyboard player, and he didn't even have an amp. He just was through the PA, so it was just like my bass, and John says, it's just you and me, kid. And so I played, and it was great. And adapting from the guitar to the bass was kind of funny because I was playing with a pick because my fingers were in the chop, and the leader, Paul Flynn, he says to me at the break, he says, I was pretty good. So I passed the audition, and he called me. He says, yeah, you got the job if you want it. You know, I says, yeah, okay. And I says, well, will you come out? I lived in the North Shore then in Haleiwa. And I says, well, will you come out on the weekend and go through these songs? I says, I've taped your night, but I says, I'm a little curious about some of these key changes and the kind of off-the-wall Beach Boys stuff. And I'd like to just polish up a little bit before I come in and do the gig. And he says, yeah, I'll come out on Sunday. Well, he calls me Sunday and he says, ah, you can just do it. You know, Saturday I need to come out. You'll be all right. And I says, be all right. And I've written out all these things. And I go in, I play the first set with a pick and take a break. And he says, you know, he said, I don't like the pick. I says, what? He says, no, he says, I don't like, you play all right. He says, but I don't like that pick. Don't use a pick. Oh, okay. I'll use my fingers. So I started, I had to learn. And the next set, I was up with no pick, playing with my fingers on the bass. And I got really good. And I was glad that he did that because I think it sounds much better with fingers than pick, you know, on a bass.
Let's get caught up here. Where are you both living today? And what are you doing as far as music, if anything?
Well, I live in Mounds View. I was with a country group for 18 years, which ended in about 99. Since that time, I've been doing a lot of producing some of my old stuff. I produced a record of my wife, a CD in 2001, Celtic music. I had recorded an album in 1982 with a group called Overland Express, Denny Hemmingson on guitar, who now has been with Tim McGraw for 15 years, and Ron Rotter on drums. I left that group, and the record was never released. So in 2011, I contacted Denny and asked him if he would be opposed to me releasing it now as a CD, and he said that'd be great. So I did that in 2011, paid all the royalties and sent him a lot of copies, and the drummer a lot of copies. It's a very good CD. Denny is one of the best in the business, guitar player. I play steel, too. Last December, I released a CD of all my early unreleased songs, including The Weed, that Keith's group backed me up on, and a lot of other ones that I recorded when I was 19. And my wife and I did one song. That was to go along with a short story I wrote called Rocky's Cafe, that I started when I was 19, but finished when I was 61 or whatever it was. Can't rush into these things, you know. I'm playing music, but only at home.
Okay. And Keith, where are you living these days, and what are you up to as far as music?
Well, I'm in Winona, Minnesota, and back in Minnesota from Hawaii. And my wife and I came back. I met my wife in Hawaii. We came back in 91. We bought a restaurant in Wayland, Minnesota, and turned it into a pie shop that my sister had opened it up, and it was kind of a third-generation building. But the bike trail goes down by the Lanesboro, Wayland area, and it's big, 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 big. We came back and ran a pie shop for 3 years and just got burned out with the tourists and stuff and sold it. That time I wasn't really playing much music, and then I started playing as a duo with a guy. Then I just kind of branched out in a couple of other groups. I've stayed busy. I've been playing with the Pettit Sisters, filling in for a couple of them, and playing with a blues band called Bump City out of Rochester on a few dates. And then with the Memory Brothers, who I've been working with off and on for the last 2-3 years, not all the time, but he has different people he uses, and as a duo and sometimes more. We're going to get inducted into the Iowa Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this September 1st.
At Arnold's Park,
and with B.J. Thomas and Wanda Jackson. So I'm looking forward to that. So, in fact, I'm playing next Friday in Rochester with the sisters at the VFW. So I'm still out, still playing music, still enjoying it, collecting guitars and amps, and I still work a day job. So I work at Riverside Electronics in Rushford, Minnesota. So still active.
And there's kind of a surprise here with your live album recorded at Papa Joe's. It has now become a highly sought-after record by record collectors. And selling for what kind of prices now?
I guess the most I've seen advertised was $800. I think $400 is more like it. But the book shows $1,500. So it's one of those things that you really can't predict.
Was that a surprise to you, Keith, when you found out that
record? The last time I heard, and Jack had went into some music store a few years ago and said it went for $300 on the wall or something somewhere. And I says, what? I said, how many do they want to buy? I'll go to everyone I know. I'll get the albums back, you know, and they're always playing it. But I got a couple around, two yet myself. And Jack, I think, has some mint ones, don't you?
Well, I have one mint that was unplayed. Then I had two more, and I think I sold one to a friend of mine. And actually, we traded. He gave me $400 worth of antiques for my record. And I thought that was all right. But, you know, he wanted it really bad, and so I...
So looking back at the Starliners during that period in the 1960s, if you had to summarize it briefly, how would you describe it, Keith?
I don't know. I thought it was just a great time to be alive. I think the 60s were just wonderful. Oh, and the 50s, too. Late 50s, 60s. I'm so glad to have been alive during that time because the music was nice. I still love the 50s music and the 60s. And the 70s is just, I don't know. But it was just a great time to be playing music. It was, you know, it was new. When I started, there wasn't as many bands as there are now, but I just loved it. Music is great. Keep me young. I'll be 70 in January. and I'm still out there playing. I love it.
Jack?
I loved it because the top 40 was different then. You could have country, you could have folk, Peter, Paul, and Mary. You could have Jimi Hendrix and the Beatles. It was all together in a one big top 40. It kept getting less and less mixed over the years. In 70s, 80s, all of a sudden it was two top 40s. Then it was the country top 40 and the rock and roll top 40. And things still crossed over. There was the pop category, which kind of would go into each category. When we were playing, you know, I could do Glenn Campbell if I wanted to, and Keith could do Jimi Hendrix, and we could put it all out in the same set. And there was public who liked it, as long as they could dance to it.
Keith, Jack, thank you for taking the time to come out to Sunrise Sound here in Rogers today and share with us your story of being in the local music business back in the 1960s.
Well, we got to thank you guys for keeping us alive. Really, you do a wonderful job. I mean, I was just, when you sent me the info on your site, and I checked on it, and I looked at it, and I says, this is the biggest labor of love I've seen for this music. But you guys have a wonderful site. And I said, I'm just honored to be on it. And it's just great. I'm just telling everyone, like you and everybody that I know, you know, I said, you got to be on this site because you guys were players, you were there, and these guys do it right. And it's really an honor to be on here. Thank you.
Well, on behalf of Denny and myself, thank you for the kind words.
The preceding interview was recorded on July 21st, 2013 at Sunrise Sound in Rogers, Minnesota, and was produced by Denny Johnson and Tom Campbell. The copyright owner of this interview is MiniPaulMusic.com.
You may be wondering why I love you.